This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Another Obama trip to Riyadh, and there's not much pomp and ceremony. In fact, if there is one place where you can find little evidence of global warming, it's between Washington and Saudi Arabia, where the chill is a carved ice elephant in the room that won't be melting when King Salman and President Obama once again shake chilly hands. Iran's nuclear deal will be helping to chill the proceedings, along with disagreements over oil policy, the civil war in Yemen, ISIS, the refugee crisis in Syria, Russia's role in the region, and there's plenty of backup chill coming from Congress set to vote on a bill that would hold the Saudi government responsible for involvement in the 9/11 attacks and punishing the country by limiting sales of military arms. Republican Senator Chris Murphy sponsoring that bill will explain why Saudi Arabia and why now in just a moment. But first, we turn to Robin Wright, joint fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace and the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. She's a contributing writer for The New Yorker.
There is deep suspicion between the two capitals that the relationship between the king, who's been in office now for only 16 months, and President Obama are not great. There are certain realities about the relationship. Both countries need each other, but the greater independence of the U.S. oil market has impacted, obviously, the dependence the United States has on imported oil. And that, of course, was the foundation of that relationship. But it's also an interesting time in Saudi Arabia's evolution. This is a country that faces now threats militarily on its northern border with ISIS moving into Iraq and Syria, and on its southern border with Al-Qaeda operating in Yemen, and, of course, a violent civil war in which Saudi Arabia is playing the dominant role. So this is a very different dynamic than it was the last time they met.
Is the Yemen conflict more about Al-Qaeda, or is it more about a proxy war with Iran, in that the Houthis are believed to be ostensibly Shiite, but you get differing reports as to whether they're actually proxies for Iran or not?
Well, Saudi Arabia clearly feels that Yemen's future will impact whatever happens inside Saudi Arabia. The civil war there played out both tribally and in sectarian terms. And, of course, the Saudis are worried because the Houthis in the past have had a relationship with Iran. But it's not nearly the equivalent of what Iran has with, for example, Lebanon's Hezbollah or Syria's President Bashar Assad. It's a different nature of a relationship. But Saudi Arabia is now viewing many of its security threats, its economic threats, even the balance of power in the region, through the prism of Iran's growing role, particularly its growing acceptance in the aftermath of a nuclear deal that was implemented in January after 2 years of serious international negotiations.
Do you think that the Saudis are looking at the situation as having become like Iran and Iraq used to be during the 1980s, where the U.S. would try to balance the two, one against the other, in a way, brutally keeping a war between the two going for many, many years, expending, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives in the process, that's where this is headed?
No, I think the United States actually wants to diffuse the tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and that it wants Saudi Arabia, first of all, to embrace the nuclear deal more fulsomely than it has in the past, and also not look at Iran necessarily as an enemy to which to go to war. It's a different component. He wants a cold peace. At the same time, the United States is likely to commit greater defense support for not just Saudi Arabia, but the other five oil-rich sheikhdoms in the Gulf as well. The president's trip will include meetings with the six members of the Gulf Cooperation Council. And I think there'll be an attempt to say the United States stands together with these strategically important Gulf governments.
Does the Saudi government see beyond Barack Obama at this point and look forward to some warming relationship with potentially one of the candidates? I mean, you've got this initiative in the Congress to blame Saudi Arabia for the 9/11 attacks years after that happened, and to bring that up can only just chill things worse.
The kingdom is clearly looking forward to a different kind of relationship under new administration. But at the same time, your question points out the fundamental problem between Riyadh and Washington, and that is there is growing suspicion, not just of whoever is resident in the White House, but what's happening in Congress as well. And there's a sense that in a Republican-led Congress, you see growing efforts, punitive efforts against Saudi Arabia. And so it's this broader tension that the relationship is eroding more than it has been, let's say, since any time since 1973 and the oil price hike. There's, you know, this fundamental question about, can Saudi Arabia rely on the United States? And of course, there are growing questions in Washington about, is Saudi Arabia the kind of ally the United States really wants and values long term?
Robin Wright, joint fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace and the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. She's a contributing writer for The New Yorker. Robin, thanks as always.
Thank you, John.
The U.S.-Saudi relationship has been one the U.S. Congress has been keen to weigh in on, whether to claim the U.S. is making Israel less secure by selling arms to the Saudis or relying too much on Saudi Arabia for regional stability, to whether Saudi Arabia is an ally in the war on terror. According to congressional researchers, the United States has sold over $100 billion in arms to Saudi Arabia since 2010. There is a $1.3 billion deal to replenish Saudi bomb stockpiles working its way to a vote, but a Senate bill wants to freeze arms sales to Saudi Arabia. The bill is co-sponsored by Republican Senator from Kentucky Rand Paul and Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick spoke with Senator Murphy about how this bill looks with the president on an official Saudi visit.
We own the Saudi conduct inside Yemen. And so if you talk to Yemenis, they will tell you that this is a U.S.-Saudi bombing campaign, not a Saudi-U.S. bombing campaign, a U.S.-Saudi bombing campaign. And so when you look at the thousands of civilians that have been killed, we have to go into this with eyes wide open that we are going to be perceived to own those civilian casualties inside Yemen. I think there's some misbelief that because we aren't actually dropping the bombs out of U.S. planes, that we won't be held responsible. We are held responsible.
Let's talk about eyes wide open, because even if you're completely correct in terms of the principled view of providing these types of weapons to the Saudis when they're engaged in this kind of war, the Saudis provide an important role for U.S. foreign policy. There is a delicate, if not unsavory, balance of power in the Middle East. The Saudis are an important ballast against Iran. They are putatively on our side against ISIS, although sometimes that seems to be in doubt. So limiting these weapon sales in a way that you and others are proposing, it could be argued, is upsetting a careful balance that we use to keep other bad actors in the region at bay.
Well, let's talk about the conditions that I'm proposing to apply to this sale. I'm proposing that the Saudis make a commitment not to use cluster bombs, that they don't target civilians, and that they make a commitment to go after terrorists like AQAP and ISIL with as much vigor as they use to go after the Houthis. I don't know how anybody here in the United States Congress can argue with that, and I would challenge the Saudis to explain to us why that wouldn't result in a, I think, fundamentally productive balance of their security interests and our security interests. You know, when we signed the Iran nuclear agreement, we didn't sign up to back the Saudis' play in each and every instance that they choose to go to war against Iran in the region. I think that would be a very dangerous byproduct of the Iran nuclear agreement.
Is there a risk that making the Saudis unhappy with the munitions that they feel they need in Yemen, whatever that is, that it has a knock-on effect of making them less willing to help us in other places where we truly need them? That's a little bit of a cold calculation, but this kind of thing can be transactional.
The idea that simply applying some common sense conditions to an arms sale is an abandonment of the Saudis or a gift to the Iranians is a Saudi construct that they have been very glad to have had adopted by elements of the foreign policy establishment in the United States. I mean, the fact is this is a complicated relationship, and there are ways that the Saudis advance U.S. national security interests, but then there are lots of ways in which they are detrimental to U.S. national security interests. If this is truly a complicated relationship, then our support for the Saudis has to be conditional. And when it comes to these arms sales right now, I don't think it's conditional enough. And in the end, I think that our support for this bombing campaign could come back to bite us in a very significant way.
I talked to one senior Democratic source in a position to know when I asked what about the Murphy-Paul Saudi weapons bill. The answer I got back was two words, no chance.
I understand what I'm doing and what Senator Paul is doing is countercultural. You know, when you get sworn into Congress, you are told that the Saudis are a sacred ally of the United States. I don't want to walk away from that alliance, not in the least. I just want our policy to underscore the complexity of the relationship. And I want our arms sales to try to push the Saudis into a more productive stance in the region, a greater willingness to take on terrorists rather than just Iran, and into a conversation about how some of the funding sources that come out of Saudi Arabia actually end up funding the very building blocks of the extremist movement that we're trying to fight.
Senator Chris Murphy, thank you.
Thank you.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick speaking to Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.